This is your DayX World War III update. Pardon my absence in documenting the multitude of unprecedented events that have unfolded over the weekend, but I, quite frankly, was preoccupied with more important things like actually committing to the practical preparedness endeavors that are going to extend the range of myself and my family post-DayX, as I would implore all of you to be doing so at this point in time. As we get closer to that fateful, inevitable day, I start to realize how much time is actually worth at this point in time. How much do we need to reassure ourselves that things are bad and they're only going to get worse? How much time do we invest in consumption of this adrenaline-inducing, alarmist-type media? And necessarily so, because there is cause for alarm. But that alarm should not be paralyzing. That alarm must be motivating. It's kind of like people who just watch motivational videos and they never actually go out and do the thing. They just spend half their day listening to motivational vote. They never actually go and they do the work. So I'd implore you, seize upon the global supply chain. Leverage it for its multitude of possibilities. Because when the lights go out, it's going to be hundreds of times more difficult to do what you can probably do in an hour right now. It's going to take you hundreds of hours to accomplish. So I just get this sense of angst that as we approach that fateful day and seeing all the angles that I do with preparedness, having done thousands of videos on SHTF, a pocket talk, and all manner of innovative preparedness solutions that we try to bestow upon the community, you just start to realize, holy shit, the more prepared I get, the greater the island of my ignorance, as the saying goes. So that's what I've been up to, and I know I missed the opportunity to titillate of a lot of adrenal glands over the weekend and make some sensationalist headlines, but this is more important. We really do need to be preparing for DayX. And DayX, to put it mildly, is just, it's the day when the lights go out and they don't come back on. The more technical definition would be the point at which the intersectionality of polycrises reaches a tipping point and the system, for lack of better terms, just breaks. It's the point in which they cease to be able to plug the holes on the sinking ship, and it just sinks, and something in the system breaks, and it has a cascading effect that affects everything. That could be a preemptive nuclear strike, that could be biological warfare, that could be a massive cyber attack, that could be the banks collapsing. But each one of those things, any one of those things, exacerbates the likelihood of the other crises, ergo intersectionality of polycrisis. If you want, in between underwater basket weaving and whatever other sort of fine arts program, maybe they can put that intersectionality of polycrisis course in there, and I'll go teach it at a university. But probably not, because we don't have much time left. I don't got time to piss around with that kind of stuff. What the hell is going on here? Let me try to give you guys a lowdown. Where the hell do I even start? So in Iran today, on the border of Iraq, don't worry, it was just an accident, they say. It was just an accident that 12 oil tankers went up in flames. Yep, just an accident. No biggie. Listen, over the weekend, Russia committed to the largest ever and arguably most effective, so effective that we actually seen footage of the explosions in Ukraine, which is something we never get, okay? Ukraine is just to the point now where it's like, okay, we're obviously, our self-defense is not able to keep up. Of course, Russia did this in response to the Kursk initiative. I doubt it will be the last, because now Ukraine is committed to use its F-16s and its new Wunderwaffens that it's created, these long-range, highly accurate drones, which, of course, are going to leverage the global grid and NATO ISR, global grid being either GPS or Starlink, in order to meet their targets. But the situation is just going to continue to ramp up. And this was one of the biggest bombardments by Russia to date. Russia is trying to put Ukraine in the dark, and that's exactly what they have done. We also, of course, have to talk about Hezbollah's attack and Israel's so-called preemption of said attack and the targeting of thousands and tens of thousands and bazillions of missiles and launchers, which was, by the looks of things, highly inflated, to say the least, but quite possibly total bullshit. Because some video has been released today. The going meme, if you didn't know. Okay, so Hezbollah attacks Israel with 320 drones and missiles, really rockets, really their lowest of lowest tier stuff, very low in terms of the kilograms of warheads, very small, not even very that significant. And Israel claimed that they shot them all down and that all Hezbollah was able to target was a chicken coop, okay, which is really probably just a failed Israeli interceptor, because those things have been failing left and right ever since that one incident there that happened in the Golan Heights where Hezbollah allegedly struck a bunch of children who weren't even Israelis. They were Syrians, but that's neither here nor there. So the Israelis have been saying, oh yeah, none of these missiles hit, nothing happened, everything's fine, right? Well, what struck a lot of people as odd was the expressions on the faces of Netanyahu and his war cabinet. Because if everything was fine, they certainly didn't look that fine, okay? And I think we know why. Let me see if I can find the video here for you in question that essentially proves that not only did Hezbollah target successfully Israel, but that they did it multiple times on a military base with their lowest tier weaponry. Now, take a look at this, okay? This is a military base in Israel. Now, I must say, before we go any further, okay, you see an explosion there. This is 90% confirmed to be true, but at the same time, you run the risk because there's a lot of disinformation that either side will put out. Like, you remember the whole Zaluzhny thing? Oh, Zaluzhny is dead, and, you know, and they kind of, the Ukrainians were adding fuel to that fire because they knew ultimately the people who were perpetuating that idea would be embarrassed. Now, many people still believe that he was in fact injured, and that is maybe part of the reason why he's no longer the general of the Ukrainian military. But what I'm trying to say is sometimes they'll intentionally put this false information there so they can later discredit it, and therefore the purveyors of that information are viewed as disreputable. So anyways, let's just see this. Now remember, Israel said that no rockets struck a base. Okay, I already counted one explosion of a low-level rocket. Not big ordnance whatsoever. There's two. There's three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Eight rockets hit the facility. This military, nine, ten. Okay, so that's pretty serious damage. Now, not in the sense that these were massive explosions. These were precision strikes, but I'm not sure if they used drones or if they were rockets. Of course, if this video turns out to be truthful, the Israelis might come to say, well, this was just failed intercept. I don't know how they're going to spin this one. Maybe this was a video from some other time. It has been geolocated, geoconfirmed, as they say in the OSINT game. So we know that this is the base. It's just a question of, was this edited? Was this? But if this wasn't, what this signals is three main points. Number one, Israel lied through their teeth about the extent of the damage on their military bases. Now, it doesn't even care. This is only one instance. Remember, Nasrallah said that we're content that, you know, our retaliation is completed. We got you back, right? But of course, Israel just said, well, you just hit a chicken coop, because they're trying to, just like they do in Ukraine, they try to control the narrative. And there's a strict regimen in terms of what can be released to the media. So whoever released this is in some hot water, I can tell you that. But this also signals that Hezbollah's most trivial of capabilities were able to penetrate Israeli air defense. Okay? So this means that Israel, if Hezbollah's worst, arguably, and we're just presuming that this is going to be their lower tiered stuff, was able to penetrate the Iron Dome, what's going to happen when full-blown war ensues? Now, if Israel wanted to, when they're saying that they've intercepted all of these drones and missiles and that Hezbollah was completely shut down, then where's all the footage of all the interceptions? There's some footage, but not a lot in terms of where these bases were located. In addition to that, in addition to them withholding that information, that video footage that would confirm that all of these were shot down, you know, why is Hezbollah so content? Why is it not using the weaponry that we know that they have? Now, the only explanation would be that there's a certain line that Hezbollah is going to cross that is going to signal to the Americans and the Israelis that Day X has arrived. That the coordinated strike with the Axis is ensuing and that Israel is now at an existential risk. So we're in a very serious impasse. Hamas has rejected the ceasefire talks. I mean, they always reject the ceasefire, either them or, you know, the Israelis reject the ceasefire talks. But if I was an Israeli, I would be concerned as to why my government said that we shot everything down and they really didn't. Why are they trying to downplay and minimize this? Okay, is it because the Iron Dome is a paper tiger when it comes to certain types of weaponry? Again, we don't know if this is 100% true. Nowadays, the fog of war is so thick, you don't know with deep fakes and AI and, you know, grainy video with a low, because there's low light, you know, it could be not so hard to fake these types of things. But I'm telling you, man, this makes the situation far more dire. If Israel still had the supreme upper hand in their relationship, then we wouldn't need to be so concerned, right? Because then Thucydides' trap wouldn't even be a factor here. That meaning that the rising power posed really no threat to Israel, so they don't even need to worry about committing to the use of larger ordnance and escalation. But now that we know that Hezbollah has the ability to touch Israel with arguably some of its worst, lowest tier stuff, then that increases the specter of a large use of nuclear weapons entering the fray, because of course this means that Hezbollah itself poses a strategic threat to Israel. Never mind the IRGC and the Houthis and the Iranians and Hamas and whatever is going on, the factions in the West Bank. So you don't want Israel to think that they are at risk of suffering strategic defeat, because then they're going to bust out the nuclear doctrine, the Samson option. And I think that's what Hezbollah is trying to weigh. Hezbollah is okay, apparently, with taking the hit in terms of a PR perspective. And of course, there's all kinds of memes going around now that they only hit a chicken coop and things of that nature. And they seem to be okay with the embarrassment of that. And for now, it seems as though there is still some minor escalation along the front, but things have cooled down. So we're going to have to see where this goes in the future. They're saying that the Houthi and the Iranian strike is going to come next. So we're going to have to see what exactly happens with that. But in terms of the situation in Israel, I'm starting to think, and initially I thought, holy shit, like I was messaging people, I'm like, this is embarrassing for the Axis of Resistance, as they call themselves. I mean, they got their asses handed to them. If they weren't even able to effectively hit any of their targets and they only hit a chicken coop, it looks really bad. But what if it's all bullshit? And what if Israel's bases were all hit? I mean, we're talking about, what was that, like a dozen hits on one base, okay? A dozen hits. I'm sure there were probably several that were intercepted, but this is very, very suspicious. And it creates a whole new calculus to the escalation dominance within the region. Israel has banned taking pictures. Israel has prohibited the media from publishing footage of rocket strikes on strategic national infrastructure or military bases. This is according to a BBC correspondent in Beirut. So there's your proof right there. Hamas rejects the ceasefire. In just 3 weeks, the Biden administration has sent 2.5 million kilograms of military equipment. 2.5 million kilograms of military equipment. The explosion that I was showing you earlier, that was Qasr Shirin border station manned by popular mobilization forces, with the PMF confirming that the explosion is a result of an attack rather than an accident. 12 Iranian oil tankers have been destroyed with one confirmed fatality. The Iraqi military has said that no drones, aircraft, or missiles were detected, suggesting ground sabotage may be the cause. And according to Gallant, if you don't think this thing is getting ready to escalate to Iran, the Minister of Defense has said Iran's aggressiveness is breaking all records. Really? Are they referring to Hezbollah? Who are they referring to? We must be ready at any moment to fulfill the joint commitment of Israel and the United States to prevent the creation of a nuclear arsenal in Iran. They are getting ready for it, folks. That's why you have half the damn U.S. Navy, well, maybe not half, but at least a third of the operational U.S. Navy in the region right now. And it might even have something to do with Russia as well, because, of course, the Mediterranean is not too far from the Black Sea. What else do we got going on here? Zelensky says, we're preparing a response to the Russian missile strike. So if you didn't know, about 200 plus missiles, rockets, heavy ordnance made its way into Ukraine, essentially blocking out a good part of the country, targeting critical infrastructure. Now, this, of course, is in response to the Kursk invasion. It wasn't the nuclear reprisal that Ukraine was hoping for, because I think at this point in time, Ukraine knows that the clock is ticking. It needs to do something to provoke the Russians into doing something so egregious that it garners the support of the international community once again. And there needs to be some, what I call, flashbulb event, which people are going to remember where they were when it happened, so that they can leverage that in the future in order to try to generate more support. Now, why it's concerning is because F-16s were allegedly subject of some of these Russian strikes, and now you have Zelensky openly stating that they're about to use the F-16s to strike inside of Russia. Now, all the while, as we told you last week, Belarus has been deploying a third of its military towards the Ukrainian border. So things are definitely getting ready to break the threshold of managed horizontal escalation and potentially about to go vertical, because you're talking about using F-16s on Russian soil, okay? So just understand the mission creep that's happened here. We started off with what? Javelins? Okay, just really think about it. We've already progressed to using NATO aircraft, fourth-gen fighters. Sure, they're old, but they're still effective in certain respects. The Swiss Army of the Skies, as it's called. Not on Ukrainian territory, but in Russian territory. In addition to that, it's very likely that the Ukrainians have been getting assistance on building their own homegrown drone missiles, the Ukrainian jet-powered long-range attack drone, okay? It weighs 4 kilograms. That's the jet, and has a 20-kilogram blast fragmentation warhead, a large fuel tank. So this is what they're going to use for those pinprick attacks to try to attrit the Russian critical energy infrastructure. Russia's a massive place. They have a lot of oil fields, as you can see here. So these are all of the oil fields that are currently within range of Ukrainian drones. Now, Ukrainian drones, like the Cessna-looking ones, they can actually go much further than this. They can go up to, I think, 2,000 kilometers. But you can see the bulk of a lot of Russia's key oil and gas infrastructure is well within the range of Iran. So what Russia has started to do is fortify these places, kind of like the Cope cages, as they're called. Really, Cope cage is just a derogatory term for armor. That's all it is. I mean, you call it what you want, but it makes sense. You would want to armor up. The question is the armor, and is it going to be cost effective to cover all of your oil and gas infrastructure with this type of armor? And is it just going to be the difference between sending one drone and sending two? One to blow the armor, the other to go in there and to blow the oil refinery or the oil warehouse where it's stored. So, Ukraine continues to do this. In fact, they just hit another one today. Let me see if I can find it. This is Omsk. This is the largest oil refinery. Now, that, I believe, is just a gas flare of the natural gas. But that right there is the strike. And apparently, half of the facility is now shut down. So these are massive facilities. So just because, there's a small explosion of a 20-kilogram warhead, if well placed, it can definitely trigger a chain reaction that could bring the whole facility, grind it to a halt. But these little attacks are going to start to take their toll. Not going to start, they've been taking their toll for a long time, not only for Russia's economic situation, but for the actual oil and gas that's used on the front line by their military. So it's compromising their logistics. We told you last week about the rail ferry, the last one in the Russians' arsenal that was destroyed last week, that allows them some redundancy in terms of providing the Crimean Peninsula with supplies and fuel, and that has now been destroyed. So the more the Ukrainians push the Russians, the greater the likelihood that the Russians are going to have to resort to unconventional methods. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a nuclear strike, but that gets more and more likely by the day. It could very well be another piece of critical infrastructure like a dam that gets blown. There's many dams along the Dnieper River that they could still blow, much like the Kakhovka Dam. Both sides blame the other for that. But we are getting to the point where Ukraine is reducing the amount of options that Russia has. They still have options, make no mistake about it. But the options are clearly quite limited. And now, all of a sudden, I mean, they've been talking about this for some time, but I've been saying this for the longest time, is that NATO is going to continue to give Ukraine the weapons that it needs to effectively create some stasis on the front. The Russians are going to make some minor gains. Yes, they're making some breakthroughs in the Donbass here and there, but not anything that substantial. So, and substantial in the sense that, yes, they're eventually going to get to some junction where it's a logistical junction, and it's going to affect Ukraine's ability to move in manpower, material, and supplies. But it's still not going to be a game changer strategically. So, we're just reaching a point where the options are more and more limited, and the possibility of a more rash response is increasing by the day. Poland has also now stated that the fact that the Russian missiles violated NATO airspace at least twice makes their downing over the territory legitimate. Now, a drone actually crashed into Poland, I guess it would be last night, but they didn't do anything about it, citing weather conditions getting in the way, atmospheric conditions. So is that because Poland is not ready to go to war with Russia yet? Or is it that they're still along this mission creep and waiting for an event that is going to happen that is going to give them justification to enter? But we indeed were very close to Article 4. But the fact that they're not making a huge stink about it signifies that maybe they don't want war as much as some people would like to believe. Because just a couple days ago, President Duda was saying that they were getting ready to consider and contemplate creating this no-fly zone over Western Ukraine. And then a drone falls on Poland and all of a sudden it's radio silence. So maybe it was all talk. It is hard to say. This is a video of what happened in Ukraine when the power went out partway through the broadcast. And you have a lot of posters online in the NAFO crowd, you know, surprised at this. And it never ceases to amaze me that these people think there is no consequences for continuing to push a nuclear power. Okay, and all it's going to take is one nuke, and it's going to shut all of these people up. And then, of course, we're not going to hear the end of their victimization. Well, you knew that was going to happen. Here's an interesting video or still frame of a video of Vladimir Putin. Apparently, I don't know if this is, you know, an edited photo or not, but you can see there that there's clearly this not very well hidden door in the back, which leads some people to believe that Putin is in the bunker. But we know that Putin has been traveling around a lot lately, so I can't see that being the case. Some people say it's a body double, but people say a lot of things nowadays. And speaking of dams, the actual dam near Kiev was struck. This is footage that they did release. Of course, you see, in order to play the victim card, Ukraine has to show something, right? And despite all of the attacks on the infrastructure, I don't think there were many casualties, if any. I don't quote me on that. There may have been some casualties as a result of the Russian bombardment. But this is a part of the big dam in Kiev, which if that was blown, most of Kiev would be flooded out. And it would be a massive humanitarian disaster. It would be a non-nuclear disaster, but it might affect another nuclear power plant, Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, further down the river. Hard to say. What else do we got going on here? So this is the pathway of the missiles and drones that were fired. So they came from the Black Sea. They came from inside Russia, of course, from bombers. Right now, Romania has set up a new radar system, which, of course, is going to help and assist the Ukrainians in targeting the Crimean Peninsula and help in defensive efforts for Ukraine. So, again, NATO continues to offer its ISR support. Continued flights of the RQ-4B Global Hawk throughout the Baltics, as well as close to St. Petersburg. Situation is just getting, it's not getting any better, okay? The situation with Pavel Durov, the CEO of Telegram, being arrested, I think that this was more of a shot across the bow, a public lynching of sorts, to get the attention of not necessarily the people who are on Telegram, because they don't want to take away the platform that gives them full-spectrum surveillance capabilities. The government doesn't need, they don't care about encryption, okay? The government has backdoor access to all of these apps, all governments, in fact. But what they don't want to get rid of the medium altogether because, you know, if you got people, you want to be able to surveil people, okay? So just because somebody can, what's a good analogy? How would you use a surveillance metaphor to describe this? You want people to feel comfortable expressing themselves online so you know their deepest, darkest, most dissenting thoughts about any given situation. And so you don't want to ban Telegram per se, especially if it is largely being controlled by Western forces. They do want to ban TikTok because it's largely outside of their control. And of course, there's other reasons why banning TikTok actually makes sense from a strategic point of view, considering that the Chinese themselves don't even allow it in their own country because it is making people really stupid. But this is a warning shot, you know, and as I've told you before, I've been saying this for a long time, that as we approach day X, they're going to need tighter control of the narrative. So they're going to start rattling the cage of a lot of dissenting voices, ensuring that everybody is well within the Overton window or just on the edge, just enough to make it interesting. And it's becoming very difficult to give people the truth without overstepping these very nondescript boundaries that get laid out. Now, I think I've been able to circumvent this by offering both sides of the story, even though I know that Western media is largely full of shit most of the time. I also know that the other side are not pristine also. They are not innocent also. And so oftentimes you get too many politically, ideologically, and religiously charged people talking about these issues, and they get the platform because they go too hard in the paint. You gotta be more measured in how you engage in your dissent this day and age if you want to continue to assist people in trying to decipher the matrix code. As overused as that metaphor to explain things may be, largest oil refinery, the Onks oil refinery, disabled almost half of the enterprise capacity. In addition to that, we have Libya suspending their oil export operations, which has caused the price of oil to continue to spike. I was just watching this video the other, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen these slap competitions, and you know, not even Mike Judge, when he made the movie Idiocracy, could have predicted such a thing. When you think about it, you know, you think about Ow My Balls. Ow My Balls, if you've never seen the movie Idiocracy, you got to go and watch it. Okay, it's one of the most prescient films ever made. Not even he could have predicted this. Ow My Balls, I mean, that was like Jackass. Okay, that was really during the time of Mike Judge. This is just like, how can we see if we can give somebody a concussion? Like, this has to be the dumbest possible shit. If this is peak human, at the peak, the pinnacle of our technological civilization, if this is the shit we're still doing, imagine what's going to happen when the lights go out and there's no more police. Not the police that annoyingly hand out tickets like they did that surfer at the beach and tackle him to the ground for no good reason. I'm talking about the real police, the guys out there working the beat, the guys out there actually doing shit. Iran has said, we will not fall into the enemy's trap of media provocation games. And that's the sensible thing to do. I mean, if you know that they want you to attack, why would you attack? Makes perfect sense to me. Some people know that I have my criticisms of grifters. And this is one of those grifters. And I will confidently say this because I can tell a grifter from a mile away. I can tell you this one right here. Oof, boy. This is Village of the Damned level grifting. This is Tulsi Gabbard's announcement of support for Donald Trump. Oh, actually, sorry, this is her support for Joe Biden, right? This is when she was trying to get a job in the Biden administration, but they shunned her, and so she decided to go grift somewhere else instead. She's a social climber, folks, and I will make no apologies for saying that. I can tell, if you can't tell that that's a grifter, then boy, are you going to get scammed when the shit hits the fan. There's going to be some crazy religious extremists. I love my religious folks, don't get me wrong. But if you're that crazy mist lady, like the lady in the movie The Mist, and this is going to be her. Okay? She's going to be doing some crazy, you know, cult-like stuff, and she's going to be leading the charge. So just watch out for people like that. But this is Robert F. Kennedy's statement. "Just to quell any speculation, under no circumstances will I join Donald Trump on an electoral ticket. Our positions on certain fundamental issues, our approaches to governance, and our philosophies of leadership could not be further apart." I guess that all changed in a year and a half when guy needed job, right? So, you know, it is what it is. What are you going to do? I mean, some people haven't changed. I mean, I don't see Bernie Sanders asking for a job with Donald Trump. I mean, yes, he was not an independent, and sure, maybe you could say that he wasn't shunned by the Democratic Party, but something just doesn't seem right about suddenly aligning with somebody as they're the lesser of two evil. So you may claim, just, you know, throwing by the wayside this fact that you claim that the leadership could not be, philosophies of leadership cannot be further apart. So I don't know. I mean, you know, people are going to believe what they're going to believe. That's it. That's all. Iran has posted a vid saying it's the Iranian turn, showing lots of scary missiles being loaded from bunkers and all kinds of ground-based launchers all throughout the Iranian country, which is vast. And I believe it is 4,000 times bigger than the Gaza Strip. So good luck with that, Israel. You are going to need it. What else do we got to talk about here today? Yeah, Zelensky is claiming that he can now bomb all of Russia with his Polyanitsa for the first time, and it's very accurate, and he's going to use probably Elon Musk's Starlink to do it, or just GPS, who knows. Zelensky wants strikes on Moscow. According to The Guardian, threats of strikes on Moscow and St. Petersburg could force Russia to negotiate. Ukraine wants permission from the West to use long-range Storm Shadow missiles to destroy targets deep inside Russia. Well, Storm Shadow, I was of the belief that they were only, what, like 500 kilometers, like not too much further in distance and range than their ATACMS counterparts. But apparently there were some older versions that were even greater distance. Talked about Poland getting hit, yada, yada, yada. And Belarus deploying one-third of its military, special operations forces, air defense units, armored vehicles, and fighter jets to the Ukrainian border. Ukraine claims these forces are concentrated near the Gomel region, close to the Chernobyl nuclear site. That was the place where they invaded the first time, right? So who knows, maybe Belarus is getting ready to actually enter the war. Recall, the Belarus pulled their troops back about a month ago, claiming good faith, and then, of course, the Ukrainians seized upon that opportunity and moved those troops that were protecting that part of the border into the Kursk region. Now Lukashenko is moving them back. That's about all I got to say today, folks. If you want to support the channel, the best way to support the channel is to support yourself by gearing up. But I must emphasize that the number one thing you can do is self-improvement. Because at the end of the day, no matter how much stuff you have, the thing that you're going to have last is you. Your brains, your body, and those are the most important things. Getting everything perfectly aligned to the best of your capability, being the best version of yourself emotionally is very important, keeping your emotions in check. So this is why, you know, the Iranians, like right now, everybody's expecting them to just react, right? Well, you don't want to just react, because this is their version of SHTF. You want to think, you know, so enhancing your ability to think strategically. And there still is time. You know, we made this video over the weekend that was talking about what happens if day X happens 5 years from now, 24 hours from now. And in the five-year timeline, I laid out what ideally a person should be trying to do within 5 years, okay? If you cannot, and you are a person in good health, who's of an age where you can still go out there and get it and grind, and you're telling me that you can't put yourself in a position, in a more favorable position in 5 years, I'm not saying we have that long, and you are that demoralized that you don't believe in yourself, that you can put some plan together in 5 years, that you can't get out of debt, you can't find yourself a little off-grid property, then how do you really think you're going to be able to survive the rigors of SHTF? Because that's going to be 100 times more difficult. You know, I mean, this is easy right now. You go get an extra job, you save some money. There's a measurable way that you can get to where you need to be in terms of building out those self-sustaining systems. And 5 years is a generous amount of time. Now, again, I'm not convinced we have that long. I think it's under a year in terms of day X, the culmination of hostilities that I talk about. That's why I've been trying to move so fast, and that's why I've been prioritizing that over just giving the bad news every single day. Because I really do believe, and not believe, it's informed by valid inferences about the evidence that I come across every day, that we don't have a lot of time. But either way, there is still plenty of things that you can do. And every hour, just view it in those terms, that every hour while the lights are still on, that 1 hour that you can go out and you can leverage, you can work an extra hour, and with that 20, 30 bucks, 15 bucks, maybe 40 bucks, depending on where you work, you can go out and you can invest that in something that it's going to take you over 100 hours to get if the lights do go out. Okay, so just be grateful for what we have at this point in time. And it doesn't matter how much, you don't want to compare yourself either to people who have been doing this for 15, 20 years, you know, in the same way that a novice wouldn't walk into a dojo and start hating on the sensei because he knows what he's doing. You know, it's very similar to that. You wouldn't have a kindergarten going and hating on a college professor, right? Because the college professor knows bigger words. I mean, it's just the result of doing this 15, 20 years. You will get there, you know, dare I say, God willing, I know my religious people are going to love that. You know, I apparently use these terminologies because as an agnostic, I admit that I don't know the answers, okay? So I'll afford you that much. But regardless, just try to seize every waking moment right now, because the value of it cannot be measured in today's terms. The intrinsic value of your time right now to get ahead and to do the things that you need to do to get the prepare, right? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. That essentially is the 100-to-1 rule that I talk about, where 1 hour of pre-day X time is worth 100 of post-day X time. You know, it's something that is lost in the just the busyness of our daily lives while everything is fine. But we must remember that we're living in very generous times, and no matter how bad things seem, they're going to get a lot worse once we finally do cross that day X red line. So seize upon the opportunity. If you want to support the channel, get all your preparedness gear from CanadianPreparedness.com. That's the best way to do it, folks. Let's see what happens in the next 24 hours. I got to go and unload some lumber. See you on the flip side.